name, of course, is Warren Johnson.
Well, super nerdy pet peeve of mine, nitpicky. I don't think he should have been hopping over the top rope like a parkour champion.
You got me mad now.
What is your name?
Yeah, as always, with my man, Pots and Pans, Nick Ficone.
That's me.
It doesn't matter what your name is.
I don't really know us like you think that you do.
I'm Ryan Isley.
What is he doing?
Oh my God! Is he the third man?
He's the third man!
What the hell is going on here?
Straight Shooters is, the number one show on Wildfire Radio.
I'm feeling good.
No sleep, no food, no nothing. Just maniacism.
Well, the skeptics and all the people have a little bit of... Let me do this again.
Oh, it's live, Hal.
Sorry.
What actually happened on the show? Nothing.
Give me a hell yeah! I said give me a hell yeah!
What's up, ladies and gentlemen, out there, internet land? My name is Warren Johnson, joined as always by my main man, Pots and Pans, Nick Ficone, the Philly voice and Philly influencer. And you're listening to episode 219 of The Straight Shooters. I know it's been a while since we gave you some audio greatness, but we're back after a little bit of a break. You know, holidays and came up and life. You know, that thing called life gets in the way sometimes. But we back out here in these streets for episode 219 of The Straight Shooters, where you can catch us on a whole multitude of platforms. Before I get into those platforms, Nick, it's been a while since we've done this, since we sat down and had one of our in-depth discussions about the world of pro wrestling, but we're back again, and you gotta tell me how you doing, my good brother.
Man, I'm doing good because I just realized that I've been missing out on WWE The Bump, and we just talked about it right before we went on the air, and this show, there's been like 10 episodes so far, and it brings me back to Saturday mornings when I was a kid. I don't know, it just has that feel to it for me, so I feel like rejuvenated that I'm gonna go back and watch like these 10 episodes that I missed, and you know, that gave me some life today on this weird week, not just in wrestling, but in you know what, in sports all around. It's just been a weird week. Yes. And I'm ready to get back at it.
Yeah, I don't watch The Bump. I'll readily admit that. I get enough wrestling content as it is. I don't need more to my plate. But I mean, yeah, it seems like from what I can tell from afar, it seems like it should be right up your alley.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Live Wire. What was the other ones from back in the day?
Like Mania.
Mania.
There's no match exclusives where we can watch, you know, two jobbers duke it out. But, you know, there's interviews and stuff like that. And they're in a studio with, you know, like merchandise behind them, with like title belts and figures and stuff. And I was just like, man, this is cool. Like, I love watching stuff like that. It's right, like you said, it's right up my alley.
Only thing I know of it is that Stokely Hathaway, Big Stoke, has been campaigning for weeks and months to get on this show and to no avail as of yet. But that's what I really, that's the extent of my knowledge of this show. And it's called
I'll have to let you know if he eventually makes an appearance because, airs.
I'm sure it'll be all over Twitter.
I'm sure it will be. They air it every Wednesday, and it's not just on the WWE Network. It's on YouTube, and I think their Facebook Live and Instagram. So it's pretty cool where you don't exactly have to go on the network to watch it. So, you know, if you're at work and you got an hour to kill for lunch, you know, you can watch it live on Wednesday. I don't know when they drop it, if it's the same time every week, because, you know, I think I just really thought about watching it like yesterday. We're recording this on a Saturday morning. So Friday, I started watching it and then finished it today. And I was like, man, this is like pretty cool. So, man, it got my juices going.
Well, just in time, because we got a lot to talk about.
That's right.
On this show, episode 219. We're near the end of 2019. See what I did there? And it's been a crazy year. It's been a wild year in pro wrestling. We had an entire war breakout on Wednesday nights. All hell's broken loose on Wednesday nights. You know, a lot of things, different happenings going on. History has been made. Some promotions have, you know, shot up in popularity, or at least in notoriety. And others, you know, we'll talk about it, have kind of taken a dip, a bit of a dip in notoriety and popularity. And we're going to just really run through
Really just the biggest happenings, top happenings of the year in 2019. So this is going to be, I guess, our year-end wrap-up show, even though we got, about a month left and, well, not really a month. It's the 7th of December as we record this, but we got, 24 days left in the year. So there's still some stuff left to happen, but I figured now would be a good time to do it because most of it is still over. How much is going to happen in the next 24 days? I don't know. Crazy things happen in the world of pro wrestling, obviously. But before we get into our discussion, let me remind you of where you can find us on these interwebs. Of course, we're on Apple Podcasts, where you can rate, review, and subscribe to us. If you do review us on there, there's only one rating to give us, and that's 5 stars. Same goes for Google Play, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, Player FM, Overcast, SoundCloud, of course, and the new mothership, straight-shooters.simplecast.com or just shootersradio.com. Simpler link, easy to type, no dashes, shootersradio.com. You can find all 218 prior episodes of this podcast, which is, of course, known as The Straight Shooters. Go back in 2015 with this thing, and we're about to see a whole new year, 2020, a whole new decade, and we're taking off, hitting the ground running in 2020. So, of course, if you want to go back through the archives and check out what we've done from 2015 till now, check us out, shootersradio.com. And we got all whole plethora, variety of episodes, live commentaries, in-studio shows, different guests. Check them out. It's all there, shootersradio.com. Of course, we're on Patreon as well, patreon.com/shootersradio. We can subscribe to some exclusive content for the nominal fee of $1.99. Now, Nick, 2019, just your general thoughts on the year before we get into stories in depth about the year.
I got two words, and not those two words.
Whoa.
Not those two words. my two words are wrestling's back. It's been a long time since we had at least two promotions that, in the eyes of hardcore wrestling fans and even sort of casual wrestling fans, were head to head. AEW is clearly not at the height of WWE's Raw or SmackDown yet, but that doesn't mean it can't happen eventually. But this was the building blocks. Like this year, 2019, it started all the way back in January. It was almost a whole year ago, calendar year, where AEW announced that it was forming, and then it was May where their first pay-per-view show, and then October their first weekly television show. So it's been a long, arduous year for them to get everything off the ground running. But sometimes it takes that long, especially in the wrestling industry, where you have so many promotions now, and we talked about it ad nauseum on this podcast, where there's so much content that we can get for free, YouTube, even pay. There are independent companies that have their own on-demand streaming services, just like WWE Network. There's plenty of that. So I just think wrestling's back in terms of not only that, but now that 2020, we could possibly see legitimate competition to WWE in 2020. And that's what I'm looking forward to the most, because WWE's been in need of a legitimate competitor for a long time now. Their creativity has run thin, to say the least. So this will hopefully kick things up. And let me tell you, Raw and SmackDown are one thing. They seem to never change. But NXT, man, that the decision to put them against AEW head-to-head was in WWE's interests, probably their best interest, because NXT has been their best show for years, at the very least. So in terms of that, I don't want to completely say that NXT is so much better than AEW or WWE is still so much better than AEW. But now I think we can finally say there's a legitimate chance for a competitor to WWE since 2001.
I hear what you're saying, and of course your point is valid about wrestling being back. I think it's the exact opposite when you think about 2019, that it's still not back yet. We talked about this, that wrestling just isn't popping right now as far as the mainstream. Yeah, we all like what we see on TV, at least from Wednesday nights we do. I want to say about Monday and Friday nights. But on Wednesday nights, we like what we see on TV, us as wrestling fans who live and breathe this stuff and watch pretty much every single week. But outside of that, that quote-unquote wrestling bubble, it ain't really popping like that. I mean, we can look at the ratings from this past week and see, at least from Wednesday nights, and see that between both shows, there were just under 2 million people, or like 1.7, I think. I can't remember the exact number. Both shows had over 800,000. Both shows had over 800,000 viewers, which I'm sure they're both happy with. But it still is not like they're both topping a million and maybe almost two. And like that's when you say like, yeah, wrestling's here. Like it's back in the mainstream consciousness again. I actually disagree. I don't think it is. It's cool that we have all this product at our disposal, and that's what really the story of 2019 is. It's just how many viable, is that the word, is that the right way to say it? Like good promotions are out there that are running professional shows. You look back 10, 12 years ago, there are a lot of fly by night promotions that putting, you know, wrestling in a bad light. But of course WWE is a juggernaut, still around. AEW so far, at least from a business standpoint, you know, you may not agree with everything we see on TV from a, you know, creator standpoint, but their shows look professional. They're hiring professional talent. They're paying them decent money. They're not skipping payments and checks, and checks aren't bouncing, at least not yet. They're running good, good size arenas. They got all the bases covered. And you look at these other promotions, like you said, like who's the one, Beyond Wrestling? They're doing pretty well. MLW, they're not like, you know, doing large scale, widespread business, but what they're doing at a professional level, and I can respect that. They're not setting the world on fire, but they're doing it. They don't make the wrestling business look bad. You know what I'm saying? And that's really what I would want out of a promotion, is just run professional, be a professional. You don't have to be WWE and take over the world. Just be professional. And I think that's what my takeaway would be. So that's maybe the first step in wrestling coming back to mainstream consciousness at some point. I just don't think it's there yet.
Yeah, I agree with that. When I say wrestling's back, I kind of mean like the fact that for years on this podcast, we've been kind of wanting a promotion to step up and challenge WWE, because really creatively we had just WWE to lean on and talk about, because they're so big. Everybody watches it that listens to this podcast. Because that's basically what we talk about the most, because WWE is the biggest company in the world. Now, when I say wrestling's back, I think WWE's fire to creatively open the playbook is back to a degree. Now, I don't think to run three shows a week plus a pay-per-view once or even twice a month, that's a lot. So I'm not sold that WWE's back, but at least AEW's existence and the fact that they've shown since October that they can be a viable contender to WWE. What I feel like right now is they're kind of like, they feel more like WWE than even NXT does. Now, that might be a separate discussion for later on, but...
Well, we can talk about it. Let's talk about it right now. Let's talk about... I think the top story of 2019 has to be the rise of AEW. Now, you talked about the competition for WWE, at least on Wednesday nights. And it's shown at NXT, they've answered the challenge. Mm-hmm. But in your mind, they feel more like WWE than NXT.
Yeah.
That's how they feel right now.
Yeah, and I'm not... And when I look at it, I'm not talking about production values. I'm not talking about the arenas that they tour in every week, because NXT, they have that unique look about them. And until they start touring and going to different cities every week, that's not going to change. But that's not what I'm talking about when I say it feels different, more different than WWE than AEW does. Some of the things we've seen in AEW so far, you know, I think the first few episodes, I was really into it. And I was like, okay, like I could see this being very different than what I watch Monday night or Friday night. But the last month or two, I feel like it's kind of hit, and I'm not saying they can't get out of it, but almost a funk, and where they creatively, they're doing the same things, you know, like they have two cult angles going on where and it's almost similar to the Bray Wyatt, but not as over the edge. And like their matches are great. Like there's rarely any bad matches there, but like the pacing it's different in a way where, you know, they'll have two great matches back to back to like kick off a show and then they'll have a promo. When I don't necessarily think, you know, that's probably the main difference you see in the AEW shows is the format and where they'll begin with a match or two and then go to like a Cody promo or a Jericho promo or something like that. And I'm not saying those promos aren't great. They are. I actually, you know, thinking about it over the last few months, I don't mind a wrestling show starting off with a promo as long as it's entertaining. Now, I know that's formulaic, and we talked about how formulaic WWE has been over the years. A promo, as long as it's entertaining, I don't mind it kicking off a wrestling show. As long as it entertains me, you can run a promo every single week, every single show, and it wouldn't matter. Now, with AEW, some of their the women's division obviously needs work, and I'm not even talking so much about that. It's what we hear on commentary sometimes. It almost reminds me of like a Michael Cole or not even Vic Joseph, but you know maybe Jim Ross in WWE, where you know there's things there that it's just like, man, like I thought this was supposed to be different, but all it does is remind me of WWE. All it does is remind me of, you know, something going on over WWE. And they take shots at him too, where, you know, like I don't hate it, but it's not necessary. Like you see the Britt Baker shot from this past week in the crowd that literally had no reason for happening. Like there's no story behind it. There's no reason that makes sense other than to just, this is what happened on NXT TakeOver. So we're going to do it here just to quote unquote, throw a shot at, you know, WWE and NXT. Like that type of stuff is, I'm not going to say Bush League because like there's things that are Bush League and there are things that are just stupid. And I just thought that was stupid. And that it's like AEW is supposed to be different than that. They sold themselves and they still sell themselves as being the alternative to WWE. And right now NXT feels more like the alternative to WWE because not only do they have great matches, but their character development is happening every single week. They're having these great promos and it's happening in AEW, but I think it's happening quicker in NXT because you can like the rise of Keith Lee, you know, Survivor Series, the whole invasion angle. That was Keith Lee's moment. You know, he kind of been floundering a little bit in NXT. They haven't really used him until this whole angle. And now he's in a prominent position on NXT each week. And that's great. You know, hopefully they strap the rocket to him and put him in the top. Maybe he beats Adam Cole for the title. That's something I don't really see it in AEW. I don't see what guy that they're like. Yeah, they had that thing with Scorpio Sky, but then it's just like a one-week thing, pins Jericho, comes back, loses to Jericho, and then, like, where's he at? He's not, like, doing anything. Like, that reminds me of WWE. That's WWE booking right there. So, you know, that's kind of what I mean by it feels more like WWE when, to me, and at least I felt like I was sold that it was going to be different than that. And right now, I don't see how much different it is. Yes, they have great wrestlers. They have great matches. That's obvious, and I love the presentation. I still watch AEW live before NXT. I watch NXT after that, but it just feels more like WWE to me than NXT does. And I could probably think of a few more examples during the course of this podcast or maybe in the future, but for right now, that's kind of where I'm at.
You bring up obviously some valid points. I mean, the whole taking shots at WWE thing, I get it. It's fun, and I'm all for it when wrestlers take shots at each other, just for the sheer fact that it motivates them, you know, to go out there and be better. But if you're AEW, this is AEW specifically. Like, if WWE does it, they looked at it as petty. But I think if WWE does it, it also acknowledges the fact that AEW is a threat, and they don't want to acknowledge that. And technically, they're not a threat yet. At least from a business standpoint, they're not. And even from like a viewership standpoint, they're not quite a threat. I mean, you could say they're a threat to NXT, but there's still two other shows out there that WWE has on a weekly basis. But if you're AEW, just do your thing. You don't have to acknowledge the fact that there's another promotion out there that every time you do something like that, and we know that it's about WWE, it just reminds us, hey, there's another show out there. And you don't have to. You just do your thing. Be, like you said, be the alternative. Don't worry about taking shots at WWE. Put on the best show that you can put on. Now, like I said, if you're the wrestlers on Twitter and you puffing your chest out and repping your set, that's, to me, that's different. I don't know why that. I mean, maybe that's an unfair, you know, comparison or something like that. But I don't know. I just feel differently about that. I'm here for the trash talk on social media, and I don't know about the promos per se, but I'm here for it. Just if you're AEW as a promotion, like they did the commercial that said like all the NXT stuff and AEW dominates and blah, blah, and it's like, you're just reminding people that NXT exists. Like, just talk about AEW, how great AEW is. Like that's the time that you tell people how great AEW is. Not how much better it is than NXT. Who cares about NXT?
Yeah, if you want to quote pieces, quote about a certain superstar, like, oh, this guy is great or this girl is great or something like that. Coach
your guys. Yeah. It's like they don't understand, like, AEW is still a relatively unknown or people are still very unfamiliar with this, at least people outside of that wrestling bubble. Mm-hmm. So yeah, take the opportunity on TNT, which is a major network, to promote your guys, the Young Bucks, Kenny Omega, hell, even Cody, who's been on WWE TV. Promote who's the guy that runs around with Jericho? I can't remember his name off the top of my head.
Sammy Guevara. Yeah. Jake Hager or something like that.
Right. You know? Or Darby Allin, you know.
Yeah.
These guys who aren't, even John Moxley, because people don't know him as John Moxley as much as they know him as Dean Ambrose. So prop those guys up and say, we got the best stars in wrestling right now. Mm-hmm. Whether you agree with that's up for your opinion. But go out of your way to talk about how much your guys are great and not worry about NXT. That's just how I feel like from a promotional standpoint.
Yeah,
wrestlers have at it.
Yeah, I saw a tweet, and I forget who sent it out. I'll try and cite it soon. But they said AEW feels like a show that knows it's going against another show, whereas NXT acts like, you know, the show that's going head-to-head with them doesn't even exist because you never kind of – and granted, I've never watched it, and I haven't watched a two-hour NXT from beginning to end through everything. And so I don't know if, you know, comments were made about another, you know, another show like Dynamite, but I doubt it. I mean, if that's possible, that NXT really just doesn't think that anything else exists. Like, I think that's the way to go. Like, you focus on your own. And we've heard it on podcasts before. Vince McMahon never mentioned WCW before because he was always like, let's worry about us, what we do about us.
And he didn't do it until they were
exactly. Exactly. Now, I'm not saying that's not happening now, but that's kind of feels that way, where NXT is kind of like, we're not going to – and AEW's beating them in the ratings. But it's not like they're killing them, you know, like they're not destroying them. They're not crushing them. They talk about the demos and whatever. And the gap has gotten considerably closer every single week. And AEW barely beat them this past week after 2 weeks of losing. So, yes, I want both promotions to flourish. And the ratings are always going to – I understand that now. You know, before AEW and Dynamite – AEW and NXT went head-to-head – I'm sitting here kind of, I was in my own bubble. It felt like I was like, oh, this is going to be great. You know, we're going to have two great promotions. No, it's people are still picking sides against both shows have been way better than Nitro and Raw were when they started going head to head. And that's really interesting to me because people cannot hold themselves to not pick a side, and I just don't understand that. And that's a wrestling fan problem. And maybe it's an issue where maybe that happens somewhere else in another industry. Maybe it's always been like that. But for me, and the fact that I've, you know, followed wrestling since a kid, like, why do we have to pick sides? I'll never understand it. Like, I get the fact that when I did it, I was like, oh, I hate everything WCW does, even though that's awesome. And I'm like, damn it, why can't WWF do that? But I was a kid, you know, like I was growing up. I just started on the internet and people loved WCW. I'm like, what the hell, WWF rules. But I'm older now. I'm an adult and adults still do that shit. They still try to diminish NXT or AEW versus whatever they like more. And I just think that's ridiculously stupid. And with me saying that AEW reminds me more of WWE than NXT, I'm not trying to diminish AEW. I'm just pointing out what I feel as a viewer and what I feel that if AEW is saying that they're the true alternative, it doesn't really feel like that right now to me and to others. NXT feels that way. So that's kind of like my main point about, you know, the whole AEW saying they're the alternative, but they feel more like WWE than NXT does. And as the ratings show, you know, they're getting closer and closer every week. You know, AEW hasn't topped a 1.0 since the first week, I think. Maybe the second week. I don't remember exactly. But, you know, NXT hasn't topped 1.0 either. But that's okay. Like, I don't understand why people have to be point at it and be like, ha, like NXT sucks because they can't hit 1.0. Like, no, they're both great shows. People just hate NXT because it's on the WWE banner and they want AEW. They want to elevate AEW. And it's the same thing. People hate AEW just because it's not WWE. It's the same damn thing. And we'll never have that even keel wrestling fan. I think a majority of it. I think both of us seem to be even keel, but I don't think we're in the majority for that.
It doesn't seem like it. Overall, though, AEW, they had a good year. I mean, you can't deny they had a good year. They went from an unknown property to a weekly television show. Now, of course, it wasn't because they were so popular that that TNT was begging them to air their product. It was because Tony Khan and his people have friends in high places, and they can get deals done, and they got this deal done with Dynamite. But overall, like I said, they've run professional shows. It looked great. They, you know, obviously they had a ton of money behind it, and it's working out. AEW is a big success for 2019. Now, 2020 comes. This is where the rubber meets the road in some respects, because they don't have the depth WWE does. And it's clear because you see a lot of the same stuff every week. You see a lot of the same people every week. How do they continue to go through that depth? How do they continue to manage their lack of depth? Because it seemed like before the promotion started, they were signing people left and right. And you look at the roster, it's like, oh, they actually don't have that many. They need more.
Right.
So how do they continue to manage the depth? How do they continue to keep the crowds coming as far as live shows? Because I know they're not selling out every single building anymore, which, I mean, it happens. We talked about it. This is stuff we talked about. WWE can't sell out Monday Night Raw every week. They don't. Now, SmackDown a couple weeks ago, a month ago, whatever it was, that building wasn't sold out. That's in Philly. You know, this is a wrestling hotbed here. That building was nowhere near sold out. And, of course, WWE's product isn't hot, but still, it's hard to do. Even if the product was doing better, it still wouldn't have been sold out, probably.
Yeah, I'll tell you, AEW crowds have been hot, you know, like every week. Yeah. And that's great for them. You know, it makes what you're watching feel more important than a WWE crowd, which almost reacts to nothing anymore. But it's funny because I'll see the same type of stuff play out on AEW when the crowd's hot for it. But if it plays out in WWE TV, the crowd's just kind of like, eh. And it's the same type of thing. So,
They have some slightly different crowds.
That's what I think. I think that, you know, WWE has kind of proof.
More families. Kind of proof, right? WWE has more families. And I was at that show a couple weeks ago. It just reminded me that how many kids are at WWE shows.
Yeah.
I don't think there's many kids at AEW shows. I think it's, like we talked about, adult males who are, and that's their demo, and they win the demo on television every week. But they're also rooting for AEW to succeed. They are Jack, they're hyped to be there. So, of course, they're a little more energized. They're going to, you know, get up and be like, yeah, because they want AEW to succeed. So, and it's been that way the entire time that they've been in existence. So, I'm not surprised by that. And WWE's been around for 50, 60 years. So, you're not really rooting for them as much as people are rooting for AEW, who, despite its billionaire, you know, guy at the top, it's still an underdog to WWE. But, let's transition from a promotion that saw a big rise in 2019 and had a good year and could be proud of themselves for getting this promotion off the ground from nothing and making it a viable product week in and week out. Let's go from that to the exact opposite. And that is another major story in 2019, the fall of Ring of Honor. Man, what happened? Let's start. First off, and here's the thing. Before we go into this, I have always been a fan of Ring of Honor, just like you have. When I was at Philly.com, I did a lot of stories about Ring of Honor. The PR person, Mark Kruskal, that's my guy. He's very professional. Yeah. Always came to me.
Awesome guy.
And hit me up. Like, hey, we got this guy. We want to interview this guy. We want to interview that guy. And I was always like, yes, 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 yes. And very professional. And I liked writing about Ring of Honor. And they were always good to me. And, you know, I would go to the shows. And it was, hey, nothing but good things to say about that time of my life and career. That's what I'm saying. It sucks to see Ring of Honor be in this state. Because I root for Ring of Honor. A promotion that started here in Philly. Its roots are deep here in Philly. And the Northeast as a whole. It's not been a good year for 2019 for Ring of Honor in 2019. First off, they lost all their big stars at the beginning of the year. Because AEW got off the ground because Cody Rhodes, Young Bucks, in their relationship with New Japan, Kenny Omega left. All those guys are gone. Only one left really is Marty Scurll. And they started up AEW. And AEW essentially supplants it by leaps and bounds as number two promotion in North America.
Record timing.
Yeah, like it's like overnight. It's literally like as soon as the clock struck midnight in January 1st, 2019, AEW was essentially the number two promotion in North America. Yeah. Like, and it didn't even have a show yet, but you knew it was a wrap. Like, you knew what was going to happen here. So Ring of Honor, but here's the thing. We all knew this was coming. We all kind of knew that these guys were going to start up a promotion. Like, that's why All In happened in 2018. Right. And Ring of Honor knew that their contracts were all expiring at the end of 2018. They were all going to leave. They knew this. They didn't seem like it, though. Like, you wouldn't be able to tell by watching how this has played out over the course of this last year. They seemed woefully unprepared to lose. And I get it. You know, losing that many guys, big names, it hurts. It definitely hurts. And it's tough to rebound from. That's expected. You know, you expect to take at least a step back when that happens. But, well, they took many steps back. Look at
this last jogging backwards.
Just like last year or 2 years ago when they were at WrestleMania and they were doing, like, I think it was New Orleans. They had like 5,000-6,000 people at their WrestleMania show. And of course, Cody and the Bucks and all those guys, yeah. SU, all those guys were on the show. And they were doing big business, man. They were doing some of the best business they've done in the history of the promotion, which goes back to 2002. Mm. Now they can barely put like 500 people in the building. And it's like, where did it all go wrong? Well, first, like I said, we talked about this last year at the end of 2018. It was like, oh, here's the gifts we would give to, you know, things in wrestling, our gift guide for wrestling, right? And we said, we're going to give Ring of Honor some top stars. Like, we're going to give them some big names to build upon moving forward because they're going to lose all those other guys. So here is your next wave of talent. And it just didn't click. So you got that going. That's already bad. Excuse me. Business isn't great. Then on top of that, you have these PR nightmares that have popped up in recent weeks and months. Good Lord. Specifically, the Kelly Klein stuff. Now, we've been, like I said, we haven't been around for the last 2 weeks or so, so we haven't really had a chance to talk about it. But this is embarrassing, Ring of Honor. This is worse than having bad business. When you are a Ring of Honor and you cannot afford, there's very little room for error. When you're WWE, they take PR hits every week. It seems like they take the John Oliver stuff came out earlier this year.
Yeah.
All the Saudi Arabia stuff with WWE, those are all PR hits. Mm-hmm. But they're such a juggernaut, they can survive those PR mishaps and keep on trucking. Mm-hmm. You're a Ring of Honor, you can't afford to have them. There's no room for error, okay? Because you're not the juggernaut that WWE is. But here we are, and Kelly Klein is openly talking about the fact that they don't really have a concussion policy. They try to have her work hurt. There's no structure to that type of stuff. That she's woefully underpaid.
Yeah.
Did you read that Newsweek story that ran?
Not the Newsweek one, but I know that I guess one of the responses to that was you're paid the same as all the other women. And I know that was not very good.
No, because she was getting paid like $20,000 a year.
Right.
Which is the highest any woman had ever gotten paid there. I don't know if people are good with money that listen to this show. Okay. I'm not no accounting wizard by any stretch of the imagination. But you can't eat off of $20,000 a year. No. It's just, it's that simple. If you got any bills to pay, just one bill, you're not eating.
Especially if you want a roof over your head.
Right. Like, she's a grown woman with a husband. I'm sure they probably thinking about maybe potentially having kids one day. The whole nine. She should not have to have a second job when she's your women's champion. And I know that they have full-time men that make 50, 60 or whatever, which is, you know, decent. Mm-hmm. You can survive off of that. You can pay your bills. You can have a life. You don't have to have a second job. If you want to, you could, but you don't have to. You can survive. But like now you're getting into, not only is this woman, now it's a concussion issue, now it's a gender inequality issue. Because there's a pay gap now between your full-time men and your full-time woman, who's the woman's champion, who's getting paid what the part-time men get. Like, not good, Ring of Honor. Not good at all. And it's not like this is like some rumor and hearsay. This has been corroborated by multiple people who have put their name on this, like Kelly Klein, like Joy Mercury, put the name on this. They put the text out with him, Joy Mercury, and the GM, Greg, I think Gilliland is his last name.
Yeah.
And saying that how they just let the girl Maria Mannix's contract just lapse and not realize it. What the hell? That's just unprofessional. Like,
yeah.
You don't have like a just calendar a set up where you just say, hey, at this point of the year, you know, 3 or 4 months out, we're going to renegotiate with somebody to see if they want an extension. You don't, for one, you don't wait to the last minute. And for two, you don't just let it lapse. What?
Right.
Without saying, hey, either we're going to re-sign you, we're going to try to re-sign you, or saying, hey, we're not going to look into re-sign. At least you can give this person a heads up. So if you're not going to re-sign them, you give them a chance to, you know, get their stuff together before you let them go. And if you intend to re-sign this person, there's no excuses for letting that person's contract expire. And he said in the text message, like, oh, well, she could have came to us. It's like, no, that's not how that works. That's not how that works. You come to that person and say, hey, this is what we're thinking about here. And that's how you negotiate. So from that standpoint, and the pay and the concussion stuff, it's just, whew. Then Kelly Klein put out a tweet with a screen grab that Ring of Honor has blocked her on Twitter. Oh, man. Y'all just doubled down on this.
Like, no, I didn't see that one. Oh, my goodness. Look at, wow.
It's on her Twitter page. I can look at it right now. When she tweeted it out, and just like she just said, like, hey, just cheer for the wrestlers. Like, hope that, you know, they succeed in their careers. Let me see if I can find it real quick. It's embarrassing. It's on her Twitter page, though. Oh. At least it was. I don't know if it's still there. I can look and see if it's still there.
Yep. November 30th. Wow. I missed that one.
November 30th?
Still going to support the amazing talent. And there's a screenshot of Ring of Honor blocking her. Wow.
Like, how awful is that?
Unbelievable.
I can't see it.
Hey, there you are. You're the first comment down. Yikes.
That's true. I still can't see it.
You know what? There's only one like there. I'll give you a second one because that's ridiculous.
That's awful.
And have somebody else saying, I blocked Ring of Honor. Wow. You talk about, you know, just in the span of a year, how they had almost their best show in company history. And now, like you said, they're struggling to get 500 people to a show. That says a lot about not only the talent that left, and but also the fact that
they were over. Those guys were over.
That, like you said, they seemed to know this was going to happen, but they were woefully unprepared, and it definitely shows. And that's like, how do you let that happen? Like, you know it's going to happen. You're that's, I think that kind of shows how smart Cody, the Young Bucks, and Kenny Omega are when they're like, yeah, we're not going to do this under the Ring of Honor umbrella because there's a ceiling. We're going to start our own thing because we can make the ceiling. And if there is a ceiling, maybe there is no ceiling for them. And, you know, that shows how smart they are.
When you're Ring of Honor, you know that you're not going to make a ton of money. You're going to make okay money, but you're not going to make a ton.
Right.
So would you rather work for them and like these regular old buildings or this company that takes like very slow incremental steps forward?
Right.
Or would you get hooked up with a billionaire and make yourself executives of the promotion?
That was a pretty good idea by
them. Make a whole bunch of more money and perform in bigger arenas in front of bigger audiences on TNT. Oh, yeah, I think I'll take that latter option.
And that's where I'll get, like, maybe they want to seem more like WWE because they know that's where it is right now, and then they can change and be the real alternative down the road. But, you know, that's a different discussion. But that just shows that, yeah, they knew that the staying with Ring of Honor would kind of put a limit or like halt their careers to a degree. So they made the best decision for not only them, but for wrestling fans, because now we have a viable second promotion in the U.S. right now that can eventually hopefully compete with WWE. But if they had they stayed in Ring of Honor, I don't think we ever would have said, hey, Ring of Honor is a real could be a real competitor to WWE, because they never were. And they were kind of the alternative that, I mean, they had TV, but like I think I mentioned before on this show, the TV they had was kind of just there. It really didn't do anything. At least AEW's TV means something in the grand scheme of things. But man, like you talk about the fall from grace. I don't think there's any company in wrestling that had a deeper fall than Ring of Honor.
Yeah, and it's sad. I mean, Ring of Honor is steeped in history, steeped in tradition. Excuse me. Great lineage of talent at the top. We go from, of course, CM Punk, Samoa Joe, Seth Rollins. I mean, all these different guys that have come through there. You know, the list is like it's ridiculously long. Daniel Bryan. I mean, all these guys that have been there, been at the top. You know, was the face of that promotion and gave it notoriety, and then now you look at it, and it's not even. Really, I mean, I don't know. Can you put it on a talent? I'm really for one to just blame the talent because they work too hard, and yeah, you know, you could. Some people might say, well, they're just not good enough. But this is pro wrestling, where you can put people in positions to look really good.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
You can make them look really good, and Ring of Honor just ain't doing that right now.
Exactly.
Every time they have a big show, I'm looking at a picture online of the lack of bodies in the stands.
Yeah.
And it's just. That sucks, man.
I think it's just as much on creative and the people that make decisions as it is on the talent. You know, and then you kind of have, I don't want to say leeway in Ring of Honor because you are owned by like a corporation and all that, but there's probably room for creativity more so there than I would think than in WWE, because WWE kind of like, it seems like there's a hold on creativity that you're not allowed to be as creative as possible, where in Ring of Honor, you would think that, hey, come up with your ideas and we'll fine tune it and we'll go from there. And it just seems like that was never the case when Cody and et al. Left.
Yeah, so not a great year for Ring of Honor. Hopefully they can bounce back in 2019. You think they started off the year, Ring of Honor started off this year with a show in Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
That they sold out. Like, that was huge. How many promotions run Madison Square Garden that's not named WWE? None.
Right.
Literally none. I mean, AAA ran like the theater later on this year, but like the Ring of Honor got Madison Square Garden proper. Now that was after the you know, that was sold on the backs of the Bucks, the Elite,
right.
You know, guys like that. And they went at that show because AEW had started up by that point.
Mm-hmm.
But they were that was like that's crazy. Like they seem so far away from that. It's not even funny.
Impact like, Wrestling had a better year.
Possibly do that again. Possibly do that again. To think that they can promote and sell out a show at Madison Square Garden, they wouldn't even come close to selling that thing out.
They'll give out free tickets.
But that's the thing. Like, they announced it and started selling tickets well before all those guys left.
Yeah.
And then people, once they left, people were like, oh, well, I guess I gotta go. Like, I spent my money.
That's true. So, but yeah, you know, Impact Wrestling had a better year than Ring of Honor, and hey, they're not they're not the worst thing going around. I think people are kind of not all in, no pun intended, on the intergender wrestling with Tessa Blanchard and Sami Callihan having their feud going on. But
it's something
that's
different.
That's where I'm at right now. Like they put Impact on Access TV, which was good for me because I always forget to catch these shows when they come out, and it's just so much wrestling content that it's tough to really on a weekly basis to watch everything. But the fact that they put it on Access TV, it's on my DVR. I'm able to kind of watch these things. Sometimes I fast forward through it, can't watch the whole 2 hours, but you know, that stuff's interesting to me. They're storytelling. And like I said before, that's the biggest thing with me where you could do all the moves you want in a wrestling ring. You could do like moonsaults and all that stuff, and that's great. You're talented. But for me, it's the storytelling behind it. If, you know, you're using psychology and all this stuff and everything makes sense and the story is good, that's what gets me and brings me in. So for Impact, at least at this point, that's the story that I like. They had an old school show a few weeks ago. That was really fun to watch. They suspended characters for the show. Like they suspended the characters they have right now. So they gave them names. Like there was one that was Jim Builder or Jim Bill, something like that. I mixed up names or something like that, but it was cool and funny. And you know, the NWA show, I haven't caught up on that lately, but you know, like I said, that was kind of one of my favorites to watch just because of the presentation. So that stuff, I would rather watch that than Ring of Honor right now. I don't think I would have said that a year ago.
We called it though last year. We said it. We're going shopping for everything in wrestling, and that's what we got from Ring of Honor. They gave it back. We should have kept our receipt. I guess they gave it back.
They don't want it.
Yeah. Another big story that caught my eye this year was it seemed like there was a number of WWE talent that was publicly unhappy and requesting their release. Of course, ACH is chief among them. And you saw how that played out. Talked about that in depth. But like, yeah, like Luke Harper said, he requested his release. We had who was Michael Bennett just requested, or Mike Kanellis, you know, TV name, but Michael Bennett.
Ty Dillinger, you know, the beginning of the year.
Yeah, Ty Dillinger, and Oney Lorcan is saying stuff. Now he just said he was signed a new contract, but you had him. I mean, it seemed like, and I think AEW has something to do with this because you know, you saw what Ty Dillinger did. He got his release and went right over there.
Right.
But I think them having a viable alternative allowed them to say, you know what, I'm not happy here. I'm not doing nothing. I'm not, you know, Sin Cara just did the same thing.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
You know, the same thing. I'm not doing anything. I came here to work and to wrestle and to love wrestling, and I don't love it anymore because I'm not doing it. I'm just sitting backstage doing nothing. I want out. And they will publicly say it to get out. And it seemed like I just ran off like half a dozen names. It's happened a bunch this year. And I thought that was very interesting and telling about, you know, not only how what's going on backstage in WWE and how unhappy some of the talent is, but also the fact that it's happened this year as opposed to other years, because this year was the rise of AEW. And now all of a sudden, they got somewhere else to go where that might not have happened in 2018 or 2017 and years prior. But now that they do got somewhere else to go, now they're like, hey, I don't like it all of a sudden. I want out.
So, and I think a lot of it is not only that the fact that they're not wrestling, but when they do wrestle, it's here and there. There's no continuity to it. There's no story. They're not given a story to really, all right, what's going to happen from here? Like the Mike Kanellis thing, like he was like, okay, like we have this angle going on with Maria being pregnant and like, you know, this whole thing going on, what's the end game? And they couldn't really tell him what the end game was. And I think that was part of the reason why he's like, all right, well, if there's no thoughtful process of how this is going to play out, then I don't want to be a part of it. Like what good is it if there's no end game? And certain things, and we've heard Bruce Pritchard say on his podcast, they figure out the end first and then they work backwards. And that just makes sense, especially in wrestling. You figure out the end first and you work backwards to see how you can get there. And like, I understand that thought process, and I think I would work well using that thought process. But You know, I feel like nowadays that's not how they do things. They don't. They maybe pick and choose regarding what superstar. Like obviously for Roman Reigns, they're like, okay, what's the end process? Let's work towards it and work backwards. That like Mike Kanellis, you know, like Sin Cara. Like Sin Cara was on TV like 2 weeks in a row, I think, before he sent out that tweet, you know, that said he requested his release or something like that. Just because they're on TV doesn't mean they're happy. Doesn't mean like they feel like they can do more, not just inside the wrestling ring, but in terms of building a story, building a character. And I think that has a lot to do with it too. You know, just because they're on TV doesn't mean they're happy with things. Like that's status quo crap that it's like, hey, as long as I'm on TV, I'm getting paid. That's fine with me. No, they want more. They yearn for more than that. And I respect that.
Yeah, that's cool. Now everybody can get it, but I respect right. that as well. I did see, though, you can admit, if you stick around WWE, make some money, you can have a nice life. You saw Carl Anderson's tweet?
No.
He sold out his house, and he got the indoor pool, and he got something, I forget what he had in his house, but man, that man is living the life. Yeah. He's living his best life with that house, indoor pool. So there are perks of being in WWE.
Yeah.
Chief among them is getting paid. Like, that's the main thing. Yeah. So, I mean, if that's what your motivation is, by all means, stick with WWE.
I think that's finally why people are liking towards AEW, because they can, if they can't match with WWE's offer, and they can come pretty damn close. And why would you, if you're a wrestler and you have that desire to do more with yourself, you have that, you almost have that feeling of, I'm more creatively free to do what I want in AEW. And even though I'm making less than WWE, I'm still making a lot. So I think that's why AEW has become that viable alternative.
Yep. Money talks.
Yep.
You know what walks. So
I wonder how John Morrison will fit in, you know, in the new landscape of WWE. I would have liked to see him in AEW, to see what he could do. I still think he's at the top of his game. I thought he was really good in Impact Wrestling when he had his run there. So I'm looking forward to seeing what he does in his second go around here.
Probably, look, I ain't messing around him. I didn't do it with Lucha Underground. I've been with Impact. Now I'm trying to get paid. It's like, this might be his last major run. So it's like, I'm looking to cash in this time. Like, I got this guy married. I'm trying to get this house. Like, I'm trying to make this, nut so I can save up for the rest of my potentially life, you know, like,
And he will be on the bump this week. But I'm sure he'll be on WWE backstage or something too.
He's a good bumper, so it makes sense.
Yeah.
another story that is still playing out, but started in this year, was those executive director positions that WWE with.
Yeah.
With Paul Heyman coming back into the fold in a creative capacity, not just an on-screen capacity, and Eric Bischoff. He's bomb back. Remember that?
Yeah, love it.
And then he left.
Yeah, all right. 2 months later.
Which is wild. But we thought that when these guys got hired, well, I won't say we thought, because I was telling, we said it on the show, like, hey, whoa. I hit the Kawhi Leonard, hey. And everybody was going all crazy about these positions and how these shows are going to change. And I was like, we was like, hey. Who's still at the top of the food chain here? Vince McMahon? Not much is going to change. And lo and behold, now, I'll be fair. You can see there have been some changes in tone with Raw.
Yeah.
And that's Heyman's show. How much of that is due to Heyman? It seems like as soon as he got there, that's when everything kind of shifted a little bit.
Right.
Has it shifted for the better? No. But there's something. Bischoff got there, and he's on SmackDown. Nothing really changed.
Right.
And now that Bruce Pritchard is in that position, nothing has changed. If anything, it's gotten worse. And this is WWE's new flagship SmackDown now. You know, this is network television, and it's not a good show.
The only thing that was different last night was no ramp. They had the entrance set up in the stage, but without the actual like ramp.
It was probably the arena too small.
That was a big difference.
I wonder where they were.
Man, I forget where they were actually. North Carolina, I think. So they were there for the tribute to the troops taping as well. I don't think it was the same arena. But
the Bojangles Coliseum or something like that.
I wasn't even paying attention, honestly.
I don't blame you. But yeah, that was a big thing.
Yeah,
that,
you made a good point. I mean, you are seeing some new faces. Yeah. You are seeing some new faces on Raw, like Humberto Carrillo, and you know that he's getting the FaceTime, and Rusev, and Rusev's getting over, regardless of how many people hate this angle, and it is still weird, but Rusev's getting a ton of like good feedback. He's getting like cheered.
People more, like Rusev like,
as much as Rusev Day. So it's working. People it's getting him back.
Rusev, man. We want to cheer for Rusev. That's what people want to do. Like you said, with the Rusev Day stuff. And honestly, seeing him on like Up, Up, Down, Down and just seeing how he is in real life, people like this guy. So yeah, I'm not surprised at all that people are like with Rusev. People like Rusev. He's a good heel. But people want to root for Rusev.
And that's the kind of, like you said, it's like a tonal shift in a way on Raw where we're still seeing some of the formulaic things that happen, but we're also seeing more adult-oriented things as well. And could that be attributed to Heyman? Sure. Vince obviously has to give the okay, but he's given the okay, and we're as ridiculous as this angle is playing out. You know, Rusev's getting the reaction, and Bobby Lashley's getting the reaction. Lana's getting the reaction, and that's probably what this all was meant to do, because if you don't care about these three people, you're not going to react to it, and just people are starting to care about it, whether it's bad or whether it's, well, I mean, it's not good, but it's not like the worst thing they've ever done. So maybe it was just designed to get these guys' reactions, to get them back in the mindset of the casual WWE viewer, like, oh yeah, these guys are in WWE and Lana's in WWE and Rusev's in WWE. Forgot about that because they haven't been on TV in so long. You know, it's part of that. And you know what cracks me up is Eric Bischoff, you know, when he left SmackDown, he's saying on his podcast that, oh, he always understood it was going to be like a short term thing. And I'm like, wait, what? Like you uprooted your family and you moved across the country to Stanford just for a short term thing? Like you didn't even sell your house. Like I don't understand what's going on there. So that's what I'm kind of at on his podcast. I'm just like, wait. You know, he talks about the NWO angle being the fact that Razor and Diesel came in to get revenge on WCW for not making them big stars. I was like, no. That's not how it played out on TV at all. And for this, still one of my favorite podcasts to listen to other than the Straight Shooters. But even the fact that he says, oh, it was always going to be a short-term thing. I was like, well, what is short-term? Is it a year? Is it 2 years? Like, was it 2 months? That sure as hell the facts, I think.
Yeah, it was such a weird thing. Even from the very beginning, it was kind of weird, and it just kept getting more weird as time has gone on. But the last two things I'm gonna talk about is two things that are mostly positive. One, and they both happened at WrestleMania this year. I'll say this: the women main eventing WrestleMania for the first time was great. Now, WWE, of course, spent the majority of it patting themselves in the back for doing something that took them 35 years to do. But it was still nice that it happened. And it was they blew it up, made it a big deal. Of course, Ronda Rousey definitely helped with making that happen. They shoehorned Charlotte into that. I know people didn't like it at the time, but whatever. The match happened. The match wasn't great, but it was nice that they got that spotlight. And that was cool. But the thing that happened at WrestleMania that was still my favorite moment of the entire year, Kofi Kingston winning the WWE Championship.
Yep.
This was great. This was what WrestleMania should be all about. The whole story leading up, which I know was not their original intention, just like the Daniel Bryan stuff. And the story just came out a couple days ago that Daniel Bryan literally had to like march into the writer's room and like demand that he drop the title to Kofi Kingston, which I'm not surprised by. I mean, I thought about that at the time. Like, I'm pretty sure Daniel Bryan wants this to happen as much as anybody else because he was in that same spot just a couple years ago.
Right.
And he's been champion multiple times. He's champion now. So it's not like he really needs the rub here. He needs the wins and all that. Like, he's been there, done that. So he's like, look, Kofi deserves it. If anybody understood what Kofi was going through with Daniel Bryan, I'm sure he fought for him behind the scenes, and it turns out he actually did. And then we had the whole thing leading up to it. Was it a racist angle? Was Vince McMahon being a racist on TV? WWE kind of left that out there for people to kind of guess on their own, which I thought was a mistake. And then they did the whole thing of him trying to get into the match. Then he finally got into the match, and Daniel Bryan was white hot as a heel.
Yeah.
He was great. I thought Kofi Kingston really shined as a babyface, and then the match happened. It was by far the best match on the show. It was dramatic. It was, everything you would want out of a main event angle in wrestling for the championship. And then the moment happened when Kofi Kingston pinned Daniel Bryan, and he won the championship. And New Day gets into the ring. They're all bawling and crying. And they hand him. They get rid of the wooden title that Daniel Bryan had, which is great, by the way. The great craftsmanship of that title.
Yeah.
But they get him the old school, you know, regular, normal leather belt. And Xavier Woods is bawling in tears. And Kofi got his kids in the ring and his fireworks. Yeah. And it's that was great, man.
That's a WrestleMania moment.
Yeah, like literally that's like a prototypical WrestleMania storyline there. Like that's you couldn't it's so I won't say stereotypical, it's just that's what you want.
Right.
And sometimes and a lot of times in recent years, WWE has dropped the ball so many times at that moment with that type of stuff happening at WrestleMania. It should happen pretty much on an annual basis, in my opinion. I don't go to WrestleMania to watch unhappy endings. I watch WrestleMania to see those happy endings. Of course, you don't have a show full of them, but I want at least one or two.
Yeah.
Right? This is where the happy endings happen. Mm-hmm. And WWE, for whatever reason, just don't do them anymore. And unless they're forced into it, like with Daniel Bryan in 2014. And you look at every year since, it's like, well, I guess if you count Seth Rollins as a happy ending, even though he was a heel, but people were happy with it. But 2016, Roman Reigns, he was a babyface. People were unhappy with him winning. 2017, Roman Reigns. No one was happy with Roman Reigns being The Undertaker. 2018, Brock Lesnar winning. It's like, what? He's a bad guy, and no one likes this.
Roman double led, win. So that was the happy ending, I guess.
Okay. double whammy, in my opinion. And then finally, it took them 4 or 5 years to finally get back and say, hey, you know. And it wasn't even the end of the show, technically. The Becky Lynch women's main event was the end of the show, obviously, and that was the happy ending, even though it felt a little anticlimactic because the match just didn't click.
I mean, Ronda's shoulder was up, and that's why people are like, man, that ending could have been so much better, which makes the ending of Kofi Bryan even higher, I think.
Right, but you're not going to put Ronda Rousey should be in the main event. They deserve to be in the main event, too. It was the hottest angle on, you know, it was the Kofi stuff and that.
Yeah,
those are two high angles.
It's just unfortunate how the end of the women's match played out, but
right. Yeah,
I mean that's basically the only negative on that end.
Right, but that Kofi Kingston stuff was fantastic, and of course the reign, such a strange time that was, this title reign, 6 months, which was far more than what I expected. I expected him to win. You know, when we did a prediction show,
I remember we would talk about it, and you're like, you know, as long as he wins it for a month, you know, like, have that moment, and then, like, he'll drop it back the next month or something. But no, 6 months.
6 months, and he beat, like, Randy Orton. He beat Styles. He beat Samoa Joe. I mean, he was booked strong the entire time. It wasn't like he was, you know, booked like a chump and then would win these matches somehow. No, he was booked strong. I don't think he lost but like one or two times during his entire reign.
And those were what? Like non-title tag matches? Yeah. Something like that. Something
stupid like that. So he was booked strong. I thought it was well done. The issue wasn't with Kofi. It was with WWE's overall lack of creativity a lot of times. And some people started to turn on Kofi for no reason. These same people that were going crazy over Kofi Kingston just 4 or 5 months prior were like, oh, it's time to take the title off him. I'm tired of him. They wanted to put it on Randall Keith Orton.
Unreal.
Everybody, I know you hate his guts, but a lot of people out there who like think he's boring. I like Randy Orton personally, but I'm not ready to see him win his 14th world title. I'm good on that. So. It was just so weird. And then when he loses it, when he finally loses it to Brock Lesnar in like 90 seconds, people are outraged.
Not even.
Right. People are outraged again. He deserved better.
Yes.
Oh, it was too short. It was terrible. And yeah, you can say that. But like these same people were just mad at Kofi. They were just begging for Kofi to lose to Randy Orton. Now you're upset that he lost to Brock Lesnar. I don't know which one it is. Wrestling fans are crazy sometimes. But
I think it's weird thinking because he deserved better. What does that mean? Wrestling a 30-minute match against a great wrestler and losing, like, how is that any better than
a loss? Is a loss.
Brock Lesnar is Brock Lesnar. Like, I think he's got that cachet where that's what he does. Like, he buried, not buried, what's it, squashed. He squashed John Cena in like 10 minutes at SummerSlam. Like, well, would it have been better if he squashed Kofi for 10 minutes?
Right, like, him around for 10 minutes, yeah.
Yeah.
No, that doesn't matter how he lost it. To me, he had a great six-month reign, which is, again, far more than what I expected. And he did some cool, went back to Africa with the title, went to Ghana, back to his home country with the title. And that was cool, man. Like, that stuff, that him losing to Brock doesn't take away from any of the cool stuff that he got to do, you know, when he won the championship and while he was a champion. So shout out to Kofi. And that whole title run, that, like, again, my favorite moment of the year. I was genuinely happy. Like, I'm not genuinely happy for things anymore in wrestling. I'm just like, all right, they did the right thing here.
Right.
This was good. This was like, hey, that was really cool. Like, it just felt, it was one of those feel-good moments.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, so that was my favorite thing in wrestling in 2019. I know a lot of good things happened, but that was easily my favorite thing.
I'm with it.
So, as we prepare to wrap up this here show and wrap up this year of 2019, any final thoughts on 2019?
Yeah. No, I just, you know, I think it's set up TV wise. You know, we're going to go into 2020. Where will AEW be at the end of 2020? You know, that's kind of where I'm going to be at. See what kind of, you know, leaps they make next year. How many more leaps will they make next year compared to this year? And really, there was, you know, at this time last year, on the date we're recording right now, AEW wasn't even a thing. So the fact that they're already number two is a hell of a testament to those guys. And I'm looking forward to mostly that, because I know WWE is going to be WWE. You know, they, NXT is probably going to be where, I don't want to say where Raw and SmackDown are right now, but I think they've got to eventually climb into that area, because you're on broadcast TV or cable TV every week. You can't keep NXT at this level at this time next year, I don't think. But we'll see what happens.
Well, before we wrap up here on this show, lest we not forget those who have passed on in 2019. Some major names, lost some major names, some legendary names in professional wrestling in 2019. Mean Gene Okerlund, lost him this year. We lost Harley Race. I mean, you talk about one of the greatest wrestlers of all time, and arguably the greatest announcer of all time. We lost this year. Of course, we lost Pedro Morales, former WWE champion, also a WWE Hall of Famer. King Kong Bundy should be in the WWE Hall of Fame. Main event at WrestleMania 2. I mean, all those guys, legendary figures in wrestling. We lost Ashley Mazzaro this year, too. Tragically.
Yeah.
9 years old. So, and of course, and recently we lost Matt Travis, the independent wrestler Matt Travis, in the car accident, man. He got a hit and run in New York. So that's another tragic ending to a life cut short, I say. So let's not forget any, and if we miss anybody, it's not because, you know, we're overlooking, you know, intentionally. It's just we're running out of time here. But we do want to send a shout out to all those people we lost in pro wrestling this year, including the names we mentioned. And hopefully we don't, you know, I mean, you know, I don't know. I mean, hopefully we don't lose too many more next year, but
hopefully not.
Unfortunately, life works out in that manner. It's terrible. But rest in peace to those we lost in 2019. And here's to a happy and prosperous 2020 for the Straight Shooters and pro wrestling as a whole. How about that?
I like that ending.
I like that ending, too. With that said, Nick, take us out with some plugs.
You can follow me at it. Nick Pacone on Twitter, and follow us at Shooters Radio on Twitter and on Facebook at facebook.com/TheStraightShooters, and check out shootersradio.com.
There you go. Of course, we're on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, Player FM, SoundCloud, Spotify, Overcast, and shootersradio.com. We can find all 218 prior episodes of this here podcast. Until next time, I'm Vaughn Johnson, joined as always by my main man, Pots and Pans, Nick Pacone. Thanks for listening to episode 219 of The Straight Shooters, and we'll catch y'all again next week. We promise we'll catch y'all again next week.
Peace.